Indianapolis, super-powered cars thunder toward the starting line, and they're off in the world's greatest auto racing classic. Averaging as high as 129 miles an hour, the speedsters whiz around and around in a race that's 500 miles long, with a chance of trouble every foot of the way.
Wow. I have a feeling the speeds at the Indy 500 are far higher these days. This Sunday marks the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. More than 200,000 fans will pack the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Millions more will be tuning in, eagerly watching 33 of the bravest and most skilled racers zip around the 2.5-mile track in state-of-the-art vehicles at over 200 miles an hour. Quinn Kleinfelter, senior news editor at WDET in Detroit, is in Indianapolis this weekend. He says even with all the economic problems in the auto racing industry and the auto industry over the past century, the Indy 500 is still the race to win.
It's the kind of a race where if you're able to do well in it, it almost doesn't matter what happens in the entire rest of your career, or vice versa. If you mess up, even at this point in time, you could be persona non grata forever within auto racing circles. There's one person I talked to, being down at the Speedway recently, that really has a good handle on all of that. One of the most famous names in auto racing, Mario Andretti. And yet, when I talked to Mario, he said, when you look at Indy, there's just simply nothing that compares.
This is probably the only race on the motor race on the planet that is worth a championship, if you will. You're judged by that. There are great drivers that never won this race, and they're great drivers, capable of doing it, but didn't have the luck. Probably if this race was 400 miles, I would have won it six times, that type of thing. I only have one race to show for, and how many did I dominate?
What is an Indy car that makes it different from the other kinds of races, particularly NASCAR?
It's what they call an open wheel racing, meaning that the tires stick out to either side and there's no fenders. They've tried to put things to try to block some of those tires because it's easy for a car behind you to run into these and bounce up and off of the track. I mean, picture it's as if you're laying on a sofa with your legs out in front of you and your butt literally just an inch or two off of the ground. You have tires that are almost the size of your head, you know, that you're trying to look around. And you're doing a 250 miles an hour about on the straightaways. I mean, we're talking takeoff speed for some jet aircraft, which is why they have the wings on them. They're like upside down airplane wings to push the car onto the track rather than lift it off the ground. So it's a very technical thing, and it's something that had really appealed to a big segment of people, at least for the longest time. They hit this period in the 1990s, and suddenly the bottom dropped out.
Why was there a split, and do they still talk about it today?
There was a fight for control over the sport of IndyCar racing between the major team owners, the Roger Penske's, the Chip Ganassi's, and the people that owned and operated their Super Bowl, the Indianapolis 500. In that case, in those days, it was Tony George. And they had such a division that they split into two separate series where the best teams and drivers went to one, and Tony George started his own series, the Indy Racing League, and kept the Indianapolis 500. So you had the Super Bowl of Indy racing with like replacement players. And the top line first string guys were having their own series but couldn't go to the Super Bowl. It was something that destroyed in many ways the fan base for the Indy 500. Mario says that it caused a problem that is still echoing today.
We lost a generation after Tony George split the series. They all went to NASCAR because he brought NASCAR into mainstream by giving him Indianapolis. And touche to NASCAR. I mean, they made the most of it, you know. But meanwhile, we lost the fan base because the fan base felt cheated.
Certainly what Indy has going for it is the spectacle, the amazing spectacle of that speedway. Describe it. I mean, isn't it still the largest spectator sport arena in the world?
It is. It seats about 250,000 people if you look at the grandstands all the way around the track. The track itself is 2.5 miles around, and the grandstands encircle that, so they're further. Plus, they would fill in parts of the infield. It's so large, they have a 9-hole golf course inside the track. They also have a various things that they're trying to do, as you say, to try to make it more of an event now, as it's trying to not only compete with NASCAR, but with all the other things that come at sporting events, that come at the media, all the different things that people have to take their attention away. And advertisers, as is the media, as is sporting events like the Indy 500, they're all shooting oftentimes for the millennials. How do we get younger people involved? And when you talk to the Indy 500 officials, they'll say, well, we believe that we're very well positioned for that. You know, they may not have the bumping and grinding that NASCAR stock cars do, but the cars themselves are very technically advanced, and they have a lot of things that would work well, to be honest, on a phone app. They have telemetry from the pits. You can see by some radio waves just when the tire is starting to deflate so that it tells the pit crew so they can try to bring the guy in before it blows up on him. And there's other things that they're trying to do as well. I mean, this when you talk about the size of the track, you think of this infield even. The inside of the track alone is 250 acres. I mean, it's enough you could put Churchill Downs, Yankee Stadium, the Rose Bowl, the Roman Coliseum, Vatican City. You could fit all of those into the infield.
And that would help them. That would help them with millennials if they put it all in.
Well, they would. But well, they thought they would go beyond all that to try to get the millennials. So what they did is they're doing a 2016 version of Woodstock.
So on the 100th Indy, who are the favorites? Have they decided the poll?
Yeah, they have. And one of the things that is always a good thing about the Indy 500 is there, oftentimes anyways, is apart from the competition, there's some dramatic storylines. There's several now. There's a driver named Simon Pagenaud who has won the last three consecutive Indy car races and finished second in the other and is driving for Team Penske. So he is somebody that they think might have a very good chance of trying to win. And the person on the pole is a guy named James Hinchcliffe who literally almost died in a crash last year. He hit the wall and had a piece of his suspension go into his car and through the side of it and actually impale him. And they were able to pull him through that, and he's back and not only competing, but he's starting in the front row on the pole position.
Old home week. It's the old and the new at the Indy 500, the 100th Indianapolis 500. Quinn Kleinfelder, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.